You're listening to Lavender Louisville, a Racing Louisville podcast.
Hello, Big Perp Nation, and welcome to another episode of Lavender Louisville, the podcast dedicated to Racing Louisville FC. I'm written by Joe Havelda.
I'm drawn by Cody Ruth.
On today's show, after dropping points on the road and picking them up at home, Racing is still only 2 points out of playoff position because, spoiler alert, this league is crazy. Plus, lots of roster moves, and we look ahead to the second half of the Challenge Cup group stage. Lots to get to, so let's kick off the first half. Our first match to discuss this week is the 2-2 draw away at OL Reign. It was the third time this season that Racing has dropped points after going up 2-0. Cody, why does this keep happening?
Because we're not allowed to be happy. Well, let's get into the minute by minute, and we might see some patterns emerge.
Before you do, I am just going to lodge one official complaint that this game was near unwatchable with the number of replays and close-up shots while the ball was in play. It drove me insane.
Yeah, wasn't the greatest time. I mean, compounded by the fact of, you know, we knew what was coming, but the production watching it live was, yeah.
Even watching it live, the ball's in play, and then they cut to a replay, and while they're showing the replay, something happened, so then they had to show us another replay to show us what happened. CBS, cut it out, please. It's crazy. Anyway, let's get into it.
All right. Monahan seems to be on the same page as most of the rest of the team when it comes to getting in there, making trouble, and drawing fouls. And
I see indeed, what she did there.
She was able to get in and draw a yellow from a defender in the fourth minute. Now, I'm a big fan of what we're doing in this space. It really puts the defense on their back foot when they're hamstrung with yellows off the drop, especially when we have DeMello and Millay on the field that are also really capable of drawing fouls. So that I was just really tickled that Paige got in there and started the party early. In the fifth minute, Ellie had a really good interception. I mean, it was one that if she didn't pull it down, we probably would have had an on goal. In the eighth minute, Howell fights the ball past King and oopsie daisy absolutely wrecks just Fishlock and gets, you know, she gets called for the foul. But Ciara King is not a small woman. And she couldn't handle Howell. Jess Fishlock, however, is a medium-sized woman and was not up to that physicality. I mean, it's like every game, there seems to be a highlight where, you know, Howell just casually demolishes somebody, and it makes me smile every time.
Oh, yeah.
In the 12th minute, there was a really clever stretch of play that our entire defensive line shut down a counter with a really clever offside trap. And for people that have never heard that term before, you know, if you get past the last defender and it's just you and the goalkeeper behind the line and you're offsides. The offsides trap is when the defensive line steps forward. That way, the attacker is forced into a position of being offsides, and then they have to backtrack. And it's a good way of negating somebody that's really trying to get in behind your back line.
It's high risk, high reward.
And it absolutely worked. And I credit Ersig. I mean, you can kind of see where she was gesturing people forward when she saw they were, you know, looking to get beat. And sure enough, the attacker didn't really catch on until she was already a full step off. And by then, you know, she was useless. In the 18th, we had a really good chance, negated by Davis being offside. In the 19th, we implement our high press well, and we get a really great look on goal. Now, we don't constantly high press. It's not something that seems to be hard-coded into how we play. But the fact that we're able to use it effectively, it's a good sign. And indeed, I don't think that it's a good idea to constantly high press in this league full of the Sophia Smiths and Trinity Rodmans of the world. So I just wanted to call out that that was a really good implementation just then. And you know, we keep that pressure up in the final third before they get a chance to get into position. Good things will happen. In the 20th minute, Pickett almost pulls off an Olympico. And if it wasn't for their keeper being Tullis Joyce, it might have gone in. And if you've never heard that term, an Olympico is a goal straight from a corner kick without anybody else touching it. I've only seen one in real life, and that one was close.
Yeah.
In the 23rd minute, Jess Fishlock had a really unfortunate handball that it's weird the synchronicities that we see with little things like this. She was given the yellow and a penalty conceded because she was inside the box. She looked like she was just trying to cover her face because the ball was coming high and fast. And it just so happened that it hit the portion of her arm that was away from her body.
It was like, as she jumped, she was like spinning away and her hands were up. But as she spun away, now they were out to the side. And that's when the ball hit it. So her hands weren't in between her ball and the face anymore. So as she spun, her hands were kind of out to the side, and that's when the ball hit it. So very clearly, handball in the box, very, very clear penalty.
And Schwong converts her second of the year. Considering that she's notched all of hers and DeMello hasn't, I know who I'd rather have taken my penalty kicks moving forward.
It was very clinical. It was a very, very well-taken penalty.
Then in the 25th minute, we had another really good chance shut down by Davis being grossly offside and stubbornly so. I think you've got something to say about this.
I was screaming at my TV the whole run because Pickett intercepts the ball and starts taking it all the way up the field. So basically it's her and Davis against the defense. And Davis is in front of her looking back at her and like waiting for the obvious pass, but she is very clearly offside. And I think at one point Carson even like motions to her to get back on and she just didn't. So finally Carson passed it to her and she was immediately flagged for offside. The annoying part about this is Davis is looking down the defensive line. It's not like a defender was behind her and she didn't know that she was offside. All the defenders were in front of her the way she was facing. You can see that you're offside. Get back onside. It's not the first time that she's been offside this season. It's like one of my biggest complaints about her is she's always offside. And that one was just the most frustrating one and the most blatantly obvious one. And I'm over it.
It wasn't even the first time this game.
Yeah.
In the 27th minute, right after we turned over possession with that offsides, the rain gets into a really choppy and aggressive sequence and really shows that it doesn't matter how many people they've got going to the World Cup, they're the rain and they are not going to lay down for anybody. I mean, credit to them. They had me on the edge of my seat through that stretch. And the 32nd minute, I've heard a lot of discussion over this where Sarah King theoretically drew a penalty with Lauren Millay. But I watched that sequence a dozen times, and what I saw was a 50-50 ball, and both players were trying to draw that foul.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's like, that's not a penalty. I mean...
And I think they were shoulder to shoulder, too. It's not like one hit the other from behind or anything. Like, it was the definition of a 50-50, and both kind of went down. Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think that was a penalty call.
So I really wanted to underscore that I went back and watched this one frame for frame, and neither one really was interested in being on their feet. That's really all it came down to. And the 35th minute, Davis, get this, another terrible offside. In the 40th minute, Schwong got a soft but relatively fair yellow. She's usually such a well-conducted player. It was, if she was going to get a yellow, it was going to have to be a soft yellow like that.
Yeah.
In the 43rd minute, we had some really good team-based buildup, and Pickett decides to ask from distance, and it was a pretty good look. I mean, if it wasn't Tolles' choice, again, you know, there might have been more that could have been done with it, but you know, just keep asking the keeper.
You're giving all this praise to Tolles' choice, and I'm laughing because I know what happens in the second half, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, she's my favorite keeper in the league outside Katie Lund.
No, I've said it before. She's a great keeper. I will just point out, because the last time we recapped OL Reign, I said this, and I noticed it again in this game. The one thing about her is that she, when a ball is passed back to her by her teammate, she has a tendency to panic when she doesn't need to. And she did it a couple times in this game where the Racing player up top started to run towards her, but was nowhere close to her, and she immediately kicked it out of bounds. She has a tendency to do that too. So I'm a fan of Tolles' choice. I'm not knocking her, but she's not without fault.
Very fair. So we go into the half up 1-0, thanks to Schwong being clinical at the spot. And the beginning of the second half, we actually have a good bit of back and forth. A little frustrating, because it didn't look like at any point we were really building up into anything. And the rain was starting to dictate the midfield, but it wasn't getting them anywhere. So I was starting to be concerned that, you know, the rain were going to come back and sweep us, because we took our foot off the gas, I guess. In the 55th minute, another non-penalty. In both instances in this sequence, Racing was closer to the ball than the Rain player. And it's really hard to foul somebody that's behind you. And so both of these instances that I hear a lot of buzz about, neither one of them can really be called a penalty.
Yep.
In the 70th minute, Racing is now firmly in a low block. We are ensconced in our defensive third, but the Rain's not doing anything with it. They just pass it side to side, and there'd be an occasional jab into the midfield before they kick it back out. And so here's where them losing so many people on their offense obviously really came to sting, because if they had one more player with creativity in there, they probably would have been able to make something out of that sequence, even if it was just, you know, a shot on goal. But it was toothless. It came together in the 73rd minute, where Lund was forced to make a great save, just getting a paw over on a near effort. And it's another one of those, you know, Katie Lund came through and just did a real quick reaction save and got it smacked away. We turn it around, and in the 74th minute, Fisher challenges from distance. I like the audacity that she showed punting it from that far out. Like I said, keep challenging the keeper, especially considering that we seem to be having a hard time getting into our offensive third. Sure, go for the wonder strike, because we weren't really putting together a whole lot past that.
Yeah, Kayla's confidence is growing game by game, and I love it.
Yeah. In the 77th minute, this is more debated than either of the non-penalty sections that came before.
And is the least questionable one of the group.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. The ball was in the box, and it looked like there was a very clear foul, but the ball falls to Monahan, and she noticed that there is no whistle, and so she lets it rip basically right at Tullis Joyce, who, with it just being off her left shoulder, she bobbles it directly into the goal. But what made this weird is everyone was expecting the foul. Everyone stopped except for Paige Monahan. And the only thing that the ref did was they were raising an arm. They already had the whistle in their mouth because half the time they run around that way. And so they were gesturing with one arm. And the people that are, well, let's call them pro-rain, are saying that she was about to gesture for the foul.
Nope.
If that was the case, she would have been turned 180 degrees pointing at where the foul happened, mm-hmm, instead of pointing at Paige Monahan.
She also would have blown the whistle.
Everything about that looks like she was giving advantage and there was no foul being whistled. And so Paige Monahan did what was right, let it rip. And the good guys are up 2-0.
So I think a lot of the confusion here comes from the commentators. We had Mike Watts and Leanne Sanderson. Everyone knows we love Mike Watts. Everyone in Louisville loves Mike Watts. Not everyone loves Leanne Sanderson. I think she's new to broadcasting the games this year. I do like her. I think that she, of almost all of the commentators, has the most soccer knowledge and tactical knowledge and can really read a game. But that's not to say she doesn't mess things up. And in this case, she did. Even on the replay, she was not talking about what her eyes were seeing, because the way it happened was Laura Millay had the ball. She gets fouled as she's making the pass to Paige Monahan in the box. It's a clear foul. Everyone knows it's a foul. The old Rain players know it's a foul. But the ball goes to Paige Monahan. The ref takes a couple steps in that direction like a split second after Paige Monahan shoots the ball. Like, her foot has already made contact. That's when the ref raised one arm and then the goal goes in, right? That tells me she was playing advantage, because Racing had an advantage. They had a ball in the box in a shooting position and were taking a shot. That's an advantage. That's all that is. Everyone assumed that she was trying to call the foul, and even the commentators were saying, well, on the replay, Leanne Sanderson was basically saying, look, she raises her arm to call the foul, and then the shot happens. Like, no, she raised her arm after the shot, which means it's an advantage. Yeah, it was a little confusing. They showed a close-up of Coach Kim, and he was like, and you could hear what I think probably Sergio or one of the other coaches in the background going, it's a goal, right? It's a goal, right? Okay, just checking. And then you hear a bunch of clapping from Racing's bench. Like, yeah, it was confusing. But if you take 30 seconds to look at it, you see exactly what happened. So that's why I said the least controversial one of the bunch, because that's exactly what happened. And it was the right thing. And credit to Paige for playing to the whistle, unlike all the OL Rain players. Big, big fan of Paige Monahan.
For sure. Now, unfortunately, that actually marks the tail end of Racing's offensive output for the game.
Yeah.
At the 80, first minute, we are now back in our defensive third again. And then in the 82nd minute, Pickett just got beat and the rain scores. It's one of those things where you can be the best player in the world and every once in a while somebody just gets your number.
Yeah.
And you know, Carson just got wrong-sided just the least little bit, and there it is. In the 87th minute, one of the strangest damn goals I have ever seen in my life. So the rain is causing all kinds of chaos in the box, and they've got numbers in, and the ball's bobbling around, and there's this mid-height shot that seemed to be about to ricochet off of a rain player. And go back and watch. I shit you not. She drops to her knees, glances it off of her forehead, and damn near into the roof of the net without looking.
Yeah. Backwards header.
From wild.
Basically her knees.
Wild. I mean, I couldn't help but be impressed that it was fascinating. That was such a strange goal that required so much soccer intelligence in order to know where she was and how she needed to deflect it without sending it over. I mean, yeah. Everything about that was a crazy split second decision. And damn it, we're tied.
Again.
This is the weirdest form of chaos on this one, though.
Yeah.
Ah. In that same minute, another weak yellow. This one's on Pickett. And at this point, I have made a note that I'm sick of the homerism in the commentary because Mike Watts is good at being neutral. And, well, the people that they tend to put in the box with him usually aren't. And let's just say nobody's a fan of racing in the box. So, was it deserved? Possibly. Was it because we were outplayed like the commentators said was an inevitability? No. They were on the back foot for three quarters of the game. And it wasn't until they ratcheted it up almost in a panic that they finally put together an offense that started giving us trouble. I mean, you can't be outplayed for three quarters of the game and be dominant. That's just not how it works.
No, but I am going to go on record as saying I think Laura Harvey is the best coach in the league.
I can't say anything against it.
I give her a lot of credit for that turnaround. I mean, we're talking in the final 8 minutes of the game. They're down 2-0. And they get it back and almost got a third to win. Yeah, she's fantastic. I'm a big fan of hers.
Laura Harvey for national team coach.
Yes. Even though she just signed a contract extension with them. But yeah, heck yeah.
I prefer it. But that's the pill of the tape. We got to leave Seattle with a point against one of the top teams, but this felt like one that we could have won, and we were 10 minutes from doing so.
Yeah, twice in a row against a well-rained, same story. Here's the fun part. If Racing, so this is the third time this season that Racing has been up 2-0 in a game and ended up tying. If Racing had won those three games, that's six more points. They're in third place in the table. Let's just let you sit with that for a minute.
Well, I mean, it goes back to what we were saying at the very beginning of the season on the very few goals that it would have taken for us to have had a completely different season. And there it is. There's three goals right there that would have put us four places higher on the table.
Now, that being said, after this game, I'd said in our last episode, if we didn't pull full 6 points out of these two games, that I was going to start giving up hope on the playoffs, right? And after this game, being up 2-0 and only coming away with the point, that's basically where my head was. until the end of that weekend when I saw the other results in the league and Racing was still in eighth place and still, I don't remember how many points, but like 1 or 2 points out of sixth. Because the other results in the other games, the teams below us like won or drew or whatever and stopped the teams ahead of us from pulling away.
We were like 4 or 5 points. Okay, out of six.
Right. So yeah, I think it was 4 something. I don't remember, but yeah, it kept us from dropping and from the pack above us moving away more than they should have. So that's a fun little thing to think about. So let's get into the stats for this game because honestly, they're ugly. Racing had 53% possession to OL Reigns 47%. Racing had a grand total of 6 shots with 3 on target. OL Reign had 12 with 4 on target. Racing had a 70% pass accuracy to OL Reign's 66%. Racing had 3 offsides, all Kirsten Davis, to OL Reign's 1. Racing had 3 corners to OL Reign's 2. I called this a 2-1 win. Was wrong. You called it a 2-0 win. You were wrong. FIFA called it a 5-0 loss because FIFA hates Racing. And they were wrong. All right, let's put that one to bed. Moving on to happier times. Our final recap this week is the 2-1 home win against the Kansas City Current. It was the third meeting between the two clubs this year, and Racing has won all 3. So we had talked about this game and how we felt pretty comfortable with it. It's Kansas City. They're bottom of the table. It's at home. We've already beaten them twice. We felt pretty confident going into it, right? There were some other people commentary saying, oh, Kansas City is having a bit of a upswing. They're having a bit of a resurgence. They're going to be dangerous. I think they were only missing Davinia, like we talked about. So they still had CeCe Kaiser and Cooper and, you know, all these people. And in the first 5 minutes, they were basically spending the whole first 5 minutes in Racing's half. So they came out fairly strong. And in the 6th minute, ball is in the Racing box. Abby Erceg puts her foot through it to try to clear it. But Jalen Howell is in her way. Just like we were talking about in the last game with Fishlock jumping up and protecting her face and it being a handball for penalty. Same thing. Erceg boots it away. Howell is like 3 feet away from her, puts her hands up to protect her face. Ball hits her hands. Ref gives a penalty. Here's the difference between the two. Well, here are the differences between the two. First of all, Jalen Howell was only like 3 feet away from her. Secondly, in the last one, Wong Shuang hit the ball into Jess Fishlock's hands, whereas in this game, Racing hit the ball into a teammate's hands in the box. So I had a lot of problems with this. I think it was a very harsh penalty because letter of the law, sure, ball hit her hands. Spirit of the law, you don't typically see that given when the players are that close to each other and there's no chance of them getting out of the way. And also, there was no advantage for Racing. If anything, it put them in a worse position where the ball landed afterwards. So, harsh penalty call. What do you think about that?
After rewatching it, where I saw that, just like Fishlock, the contact happened away from the silhouette of the body, and her arms were intentionally put into that position, I can honestly say I think it'd be hard to not call that. Yeah.
That's fair. I hate it. I'm not saying it's not a penalty. I think it's a harsh penalty. Soft penalties. There are legit penalties. There are harsh penalties. Like the Jess Fishlock one, that one was kind of clear. Even Jess Fishlock didn't complain about that. Right? It was an opponent hitting it into her, and it clearly hit her hand. This one was a teammate hitting it into her with no advantage. And I don't know. It was a little bit harsher, but it's a penalty.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. So Cooper steps up for it. It was a really cheeky penalty by her. As she's running, like she lines up, like she's going to kick her with the right foot. And as she runs up, she centers herself and it makes it look like she's going to switch and actually kick it with her left, but still kicks it with her right and basically wrong foots Katie Lund on the line, who just watches it sail past her. It was actually a really good penalty take.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of gamesmanship that you're going to watch for every time that you're going anticipating having to do penalties. You know, you always look to see who their penalty takers are, what foot they prefer, which side they prefer to go to. And on something like that, it's like, it doesn't matter.
No.
Because she may not have even decided until that very last step, you know?
Yeah.
Well taken.
No, very well taken. Very, very impressive. Immediately after that, I was actually really impressed by Racing's response to going down 1-0 so early. They looked like they felt aggrieved by the penalty decision. They looked like they were offended that they were down 1-0 at home to Kansas City. And instead of hanging their heads for the next 5-10 minutes and working their way back in, just immediately they're like, no, this is not okay. We're not allowing this. And just got right back into it. In the 13th minute, not very long after the penalty, Racing has a corner kick. It doesn't beat the first defender, which is annoying, but it comes out to Baggett, who gives it back to Pickett. She crosses it back into the box, and as she does so, it deflects off of a defender and pops straight up in the air. Abby Erceg is back post, jumps up for it, and just bodies it into the goal. Everyone's singing, everyone dancing, music's playing, lights are going. Oh, but wait. Goal gets disallowed for an offside, a handball, a foul. I think they called all three in the course of disallowing that goal at one, but there's a lot of confusion. Watching this back on the rewatch, I'm settling on it being a handball, and I saw live that when the ref finally made the signal, she like patted her arm. So obviously they called a handball on it. I'm assuming that the VAR booth had a different angle than we did on the replay on Paramount, because the only replay we had was from the backside where you couldn't see her arm and where the ball hit it. So I think a handball at the end was basically what they called to take the goal away.
Now, like you said, we only had the one angle, but there are a couple of things that could have come into play to mitigate that. If it were higher than the cuff of the sleeve, it's not a handball.
Right.
And her arm looked to be flat against her body. And if that's the case, she was not making herself unnaturally big. It was inside the silhouette of her body, and she couldn't tuck it any further out of the way because it was pressed up against her. If that's the case, then it shouldn't have been a handball either.
Well, and that's the funny thing. Like, her arm was tucked up against her torso, right? And they're saying it must have like come off her elbow in the process. So if her arm had been in an unnatural position away from her body, it would have come off her rib cage and the goal would have stood, which is crazy. So we should go back and count how many goals Racing scored this season that were disallowed for stupid reasons, because it's a lot at this point.
Nah, dude, I don't want to cry.
Fair. All right. So a couple minutes later, in the 16th minute, Monahan feeds Davis in long. The defender looks like they're just going to shepherd it out over the end line, but Davis did really good work to keep it in and get into the box. It ping-pongs around a little bit and ends up with Kayla Fisher taking a shot from the top of the box, but puts it over into the stands. 20th minute. Jalen Howell picks the pocket of a Kansas City player, pokes the ball to Davis, who gives it right back to Howell. She squares it to Wong, who plays a through ball to Davis, making a run into the box, but her shot saved near post. Really good ball movement. And there was a lot of that in this game. Really, really good connective passing. On that corner, the ball is headed out to Wong at the top of the box, who rips a shot, gets a couple deflections. Everyone's scrambling. The ball falls to the feet of Ellie Pikuyamsa, who buries it for her first NWSL goal.
It feels amazing. I was so excited. Maybe everyone saw it. So I needed to take it, everything out of it, since you never know how much you're going to score. So
walk us through it.
I think we had a corner kick. Mm-hmm. Yes, we did. And then it was a second ball and the third ball. And then I got a nice and slowly ball to the end of the box, kind of-ish. And then I saw a little gap for a nice hard shot. So that's it. And then I needed to make sure that it goes in because I sometimes love to hit the post and stuff. So I took my time and I saw it went in and then I ran my ass off.
Now, the most impressive thing about this is she went far post through traffic because she got the ball, just had a split second to get her head up and saw that lane and cracked it right down this slot that was barely wider than the ball.
Yeah.
It was a pinpoint shot
from like 6 yards out. And it was very quick.
But it traveled 12 yards because it went to the opposite side of the goal.
That's what I mean. Like, she's very close in. It ping-pongs around. There's a bit of a scramble. It falls to her feet. And in a split second, she looks up, finds the window, and puts her laces through it. She didn't just, like, poke at it or try to place it. She just smacked it. And great celebration, too. No, super excited because I think she had one called off at one point. Or she had a couple really, really close, almost goals a couple games ago. So glad she got her first. Let's see. 31st minute. Fisher breaks up a pass. Monahan takes it to the top of the box, but her shot is saved out for a corner. 32nd minute. Fisher breaks up a pass, gets it to the Wong at the top of the box, who puts her shot into the Ohio River. So I just want to point those out. 1 minute apart, Kayla Fisher breaking up passes and getting it to people who get shots off. She had a heck of a game. And again, every game she's getting better. And she was taken in the second round of the draft this year. It's crazy. 34th minute. Monahan gets taken out at the top of the box. The free kick is squared to Wong. Her shot's deflected to Davis, but her shot is blocked out for a corner. 38th minute. Racing corner gets cleared out to Wong, who puts her shot over the net again. This is all within like 8 minutes, and they're getting shot after shot after shot. In the 40th minute, Fisher goes in to tackle CeCe Kaiser, gets the ball cleanly, but CeCe lands awkwardly and rolls her ankle and ends up having to get subbed out and was in a walking boot after the game. Haven't seen any update on how bad that was, but we mentioned at halftime that that was 50% of their offense on the field was just taken out. It didn't look like it wasn't a dirty foul. I don't even think they called it a foul because she got the ball cleanly. CeCe just came down awkwardly. And hopefully nobody blames that on our pitch.
Now, what happened was when she was coming down, her toe caught just a little too much of the ground as her foot was pointed down, and it just pulled her foot in an awful way when her body weight started to come down onto it. And just, oof. Yeah. It was hard watching that.
Yeah, she was in some pain. Sad to see it. All right, 44th minute. Pickett sends in a cross. It gets punched out by Franch, cleared out to Jalen Howell at the top of the box, who rips a shot and puts it in the Ohio River. 45th minute. Wong runs into space, gets a long shot right at Franch. On that run, she maybe could have fed Davis in to the right for an open shot, but her passing lane did close down pretty quickly. 45th minute plus one. We're now into stoppage time. Howell and Fisher both muscle a player off the ball. Everyone was expecting a foul call. There wasn't one. So Howell brings it forward. She slots in Paige Monahan, who slots in Kirsten Davis, who puts her shot over the bar from about 12 yards out. That one actually annoyed me because it was a perfectly played sequence. It was a perfect pass to her. She was open with a shot on goal from 12 yards out and still managed to put that one over. I felt like she could have done better on that one.
Yeah, it was a really unfortunate end to a really great transition. And I mean, at this point, considering how many times we've said her name in not great ways, even this episode. You got to wonder if she's starting to get nerves.
Yeah, I don't want to get accused of piling on Kirsten Davis, but at the same time, I need more from her. I just need more. I was praising her early in the season and just haven't seen it from her since. And that might play into something we have teed up for halftime. Let's see. 1 minute later, 2 minutes into stoppage time, Davis plays Monahan in, who gets taken out either just outside or just inside the box with no call, and then was down hurt for a little bit. Delfava slid into her, but in what I saw in the replay, and I watched this one several times, I don't think she got the ball. I think she clipped Monahan's ankles and Monahan went down. The reason I feel like it wasn't reviewed and given, she must have been just outside the box, which means it wouldn't have been a penalty, so there's no review. But I do think that was a bad call.
Yeah, I am inclined to agree that the foul happened outside the box, and so it's not eligible for review. Yeah. And it's still a little dodgy that the foul wasn't called, but
well,
that is a little less clear.
We didn't have the best ref in this game. So, all right, last minute of stoppage time, one of the last plays. This was, I think, one of my favorite plays of the game. Howell puts a beautiful through ball up the sideline to Davis, who feeds Monahan in the box, who just taps it with their foot to lay it into the path of an on-rushing Kayla Fisher, who's wide open, who goes to place her shot. But it gets saved by a really, really nice save from AD French. That whole sequence was some of the prettiest team play. And if that had gone in, it would have been one of the prettiest team goals of the whole season. So then we're at halftime.
I just so happened to hear behind me sitting in the stadium at 45 minutes plus four, we have a throw in and we throw it directly to a Kansas City player. I mean, not even trying to throw it to a Racing player. And there was several people, why did we do that? Well, AD French kicked the ball out of bounds so that a Racing player could get treatment. That's good sportsmanship.
Yep.
And so to return that, you know, we're not going to give them the ball in a good position, but we throw the ball back to them, because if they hadn't done that to begin with, our player would have been, you know, lying on the ground in agony.
Well, and so, we had just done it a few minutes before for CeCe, because when CeCe went down, Kayla Fisher was doing a slide tackle. So she's on the ground. CeCe comes down. She's on the ground. Jalen Howell's right there. And she immediately sees that Kaiser is in pain, but she doesn't have the ball. I can't remember exactly who did, but we won the ball in that, and we started playing it up, and you can see Jalen like yelling, give me the ball, give me the ball. And as soon as she got the ball, she kicked it out of bounds to stop the play, knowing that Kaiser was hurt and needed help.
Yeah.
You'll see that all the time in soccer. Now, you won't see it every time, because if you're in a very advantageous position and you don't fully believe that the person on the ground is actually hurt, then you're not going to stop play. But in that position, it was right at the halfway line. There was no actual advantage. She could tell CeCe was in pain. So she called for the ball. She stopped the progression of the ball, had their teammates pass to her, and kicked it out of bounds. So then, yeah, like on that one, Kansas City on the throw-in gave it right back to us. So
yeah, just wanted to call that out, because there were a lot of people that didn't get what was going on. That's just fair play.
Yeah. So at halftime, I usually do stats at the end, but I had to call out our halftime stats, because at halftime, not only did we have 58% possession, we had 16 shots with 9 on target in the first half. That's insane. All right. Just wanted to put that out there. Getting into the second half. 49 seconds into the second half, we get a fun little reminder of why you always get back to your seat before kickoff. Said this last time, second home game in a row, get back to your seat before second half kickoff, because Racing might score a goal. So this one, Howell doing Howell things, bullied a player off the ball. It pops up, Wong heads it to Fisher, who brings it up towards halfway, cuts it inside a little bit, picks her head up, and sees Monahan on the far wing breaking, and puts in one of the prettiest left-footed long ball passes right to her feet. She does one little step over, Ari style, cuts it inside, and then blasts it into the top corner. This is a world-class goal right here.
Yeah. I mean, this should have been SportsCenter top 10 all day long.
I mean, for the pass, too. Everyone gets up for goals, and especially pretty goals like this, and I'm not blaming you. I almost get just as excited when a very nice through ball or long pass is played, especially when it leads to a goal like this. Like that pass from Kayla Fisher, I can't say enough about it. She got her head up, saw it, and left-footed it long ball right into her path, and then Paige just finished it. Like she's, I don't know. I'm huge fan of Paige Monahan. We might have to have conversations moving forward about whether she starts or not, because she's pretty, this is two games in a row. She got a goal. She's very, very, very good. There was also the first career assist by Kayla Fisher, and Wang Shuang got a hockey assist, the pass before the assist.
Which, I mean, if we kept track, she's probably got four on the season, I'm willing to guess.
Yeah. So while we're talking about Wang, because she's going to come up a little bit more in the second half, especially. She was another one that I was getting increasingly frustrated with the last few games. Not this game. This was easily her best game of the season. She was progressing the ball more versus getting it and either immediately turning it over or slowing down the attack by kind of cutting it back in and passing it backwards. This time, she got the ball, she looked up, and if she had space, she'd dribble forward. Or she would pass forward and was attack-minded this whole game in a way that I wish she was every game, because I thought she played extremely well. And she's my next note. In the 50th minute, she embarrasses two defenders by getting past them, gets across into the box to Fisher, who puts her shot over the bar. 59th minute, Fisher plays in Davis out wide, who gets into the box and has her shot blocked, but it falls right to Fisher and gets her shot blocked. 66th minute, Wang plays a ball over the top to Malay, who can't quite get to it, but instead of giving up, she immediately pressures the person on the ball and wins it right back. It falls to Fisher's feet, who gets a shot off, but it gets saved. And at this point, Kansas City can't get out of their own half. 77th minute. This is the one that, this one annoyed me too. Wang gets the ball in the center circle, turns, brings it up the field, slots in Parker Goins, who's come into the game, slots her in wide, and then very intelligently steps back so that now she's wide open at the top of the box and she's calling for it. But Goins doesn't give it back to her. She decides to shoot from an impossible angle and gets the shot saved. Puts it right at the keeper. If she had slotted that back to Wang, that could have been another pretty goal.
Yeah, you kind of feel that maybe she was being a little greedy, but I think that she may have just simply had a little bit of tunnel vision because she didn't have a good pass and so was looking towards goal and was trying to do the best she could.
Sure.
And just kind of missed that options had come open once she engaged.
Yeah, it was a really narrow angle, though. And with that tight of an angle, I don't know that I like a striker thinking shoot first from basically from the end line when the keeper's right in front of you. With no, I don't know. It's nitpicky, but it's also more of a testament to Wang in that play. She got the ball center circle, looked up, no one in front of her. So she brought the ball forward, played a really nice pass into Goins, and then very smartly stepped back as her defender kept moving forward. So now she's wide open. It was just very heady play from Wang, and I wish it had been rewarded, I guess is what I'm saying.
Now, we don't actually spend a whole lot of time on this pod talking about off-ball movement.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, if we did, we could do an hour every game. And I got other things that I like to do in life rather than record four pods in a week, you know?
Yeah.
So Wong's off-ball movement is among the best in the league.
Yeah.
And her positioning And the sequence really does go to show that.
Yeah. All right. 82nd minute. The doctor is in. Dr. Nadia Nadim checks in for her first minutes back from injury. Welcome back, Dr. Nadim. Also subbing in, making her debut, is new national team replacement signing Maddie Picorni. We'll have a little bit more on her at halftime, but just wanted to put that out there. What was that, 10, 15 minutes or so for both of them? And they both looked good. I thought Maddie Picorni looked good. We'll talk about her a little bit later, but just chills seeing Dr. Nadim come back in. It was funny because we saw both of them standing on the sideline, and then the camera caught a close-up of Dr. Nadim, and the crowd starts going crazy. We start standing up to clap for her, but it takes like a full minute for her to check in. And I didn't realize until I watched the replay what was happening. There was, I don't know if I call it confusion, but just a slight delay because Kansas City was also making a sub at the time. Even though they'd already made five subs, they were making a concussion sub. You get, if a player has to be pulled for concussion, then both teams get one extra sub. So they were doing that one first. They were passing the little slips back and forth. And then I think the board that they put up for the numbers wasn't quite working right away. So there's a little bit of a delay. But then Nadia checks in and the whole place went crazy for her. Very deservedly so. Very, very, very glad to see her back. And at a really good time with what we're going to talk about a little bit later. So 84th minute. This is another one I had problems with. Ball gets sent into the box, up in the air. Parker Goins jumps straight up to try to head it. A.D. French, their goalkeeper, jumps out towards Goins and the ball, and they collide. Goins gets called for the foul. She's down for a little bit because she's injured because French jumped into her and almost punched her in the head. And I looked at this a couple times. Parker Goins jumps straight up. French jumps at an angle into her, and Goins gets called for the foul. This is, they talk a lot about protecting the goalkeeper, and this is where protecting the goalkeeper goes a little too far.
I entirely agree. I mean, it was another one that was hard to watch because she came down hard. She came down real hard.
Not to mention, too, when Parker jumps up, she's looking backwards at the pass. She has no idea where French is, and she jumps straight up.
Yeah, absolutely helpless. And French just went straight through her.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the keeper is always going to get this call. And this is one of those times where I feel that it is always going to be wrong.
Yeah. And hey, we're in Kentucky. Let's make a basketball reference. It's the same in basketball. If you jump straight up, you are entitled to that space. If you jump at an angle into someone who is jumping straight up, you get called for the foul. Unless you're a goalkeeper in soccer, if there's any kind of collision, you're going to get the call in your favor.
Right. And this is one of those things to where I think that the spirit of the law isn't being implemented as much as the letter. Because in my mind, French would have drawn the foul and it would have been an indirect free kick in the box. Because that would be in line with other goalkeeper type fouls, such as handling a back pass. It's also an indirect free kick in the box. That way it's not so broken that it's a quick way to, you know, draw penalties by just surrounding the keeper and forcing them into you.
Yeah.
But still making sure that they're not playing recklessly, knowing that they're going to get the play. I don't know.
I'm with you. 88th minute, just after this. A pass gets broken up in Racing's defensive third. Ellie passes it out to Picorni, who lays it off for Wong, who plays it to Goins wide, who squares it to Nadim, who puts it just wide.
And by just wide, it was a foot.
Yeah.
And it would have been in.
This is another one that it was just gorgeous team passing and quick counterattack. Pass, 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 shot. Right? And I wrote that down too, because if that had gone in, if Nadia Nadim had scored a goal on her return after everything she's gone through. I can't even finish that sentence because I don't know what would have happened.
Oh, I mean, everyone would have completely lost their shit. I mean,
including probably her. All right. Last couple points. 90th minute. Laura Millay breaks up a pass and while she's on the ground gets kicked in the face. A yellow card is given, but I feel like that maybe could have been worse.
Yeah. I mean, there's recklessness there that could have been a straight red.
Yeah.
I mean, when a player's on the ground, you don't keep poking around and you certainly don't go for a solid kick like that. And yeah. Yellow, yeah, all day. And red, I wouldn't have been surprised.
I don't know that there would have been a lot of complaint had it been a red, is what I'm saying. It was one of those. It was more orange than yellow. All right, last point I have, because, oh, it scared me. 90th plus two in stoppage time. Kansas City gets into the box, gets a shot that's blocked by Erceg, gets an immediate follow-up shot that's also blocked by Erceg, who puts it out of bounds for a corner kick like 2 feet from the post. She did Katie Lund's patented double save in that nervy moment at the very end. And had that gone differently, we would have dropped two more points. Man, the games where racing just comfortably wins and my blood pressure stays down are great. This one felt like it was going to be for a very long time. And then right at the end, they had to spike my blood pressure again. But final whistle, they win 2-1, leaving them in seventh place, 2 points out of playoff contention because of some wild results again in the other games. So 2 points behind sixth place, which I think is San Diego right now.
Yep.
Who we still have to play.
And fun fact about that, they've been sagging a little bit.
Yeah.
There's a real good chance that when we resume play here in about a month, yeah, fun stuff could happen.
Yeah, it's this league is wild, man, because yeah, one or two rough results, and here I'm about to give up hope on the playoffs. And instead, we're in the best position. We're the closest we've been all season to the playoffs. This league is something else, man. All right, let's get into the stats. Racing had 55% possession to Kansas City's 45%. Racing had 26 total shots with 10 on target to Kansas City's 6 total shots with 2 on target. Racing had 78% pass accuracy to Kansas City's 72%. Hey, look at this. Racing only had 1 offside all game to Kansas City's none. Racing had 7 total corners to Kansas City's 2. That is domination right there in stat form.
Yeah. I mean, when you take into account that Kansas City really didn't have anything to do with the one goal that they did get, those numbers make a lot of sense. Yeah.
You pointed this out. I think you might have shared it on Twitter. The XG plot for this game was one very long flat line for Kansas City.
Yeah.
And their pass network was non-existent.
I usually try to post those to the Lavender Louisville Twitter page, but I was just too tickled. I had to put them up because after their penalty, their nothing. XG gains for the rest of the game was less than 1% or 0.1%. It was grotesque. And their pass network only connected 3 of their players out of the 11 that they had on the field.
Yeah.
They couldn't compose anything.
And I'm laughing. We beat them 3 times out of 3, and we have 1 more to play for Challenge Cup. So maybe we can go 4 for 4. I'm just laughing a little bit because of the talk pregame where Kansas City's on this resurgence. They're getting some results, and are they going to turn it around? And then they run into racing and race like, no, not today. Anyway, our predictions. I called this a 3-1 win. Ended up 2-1. I'm giving myself extra credit for calling the not clean sheet. What's the opposite of a clean sheet? A dirty sheet? Anyway, so that puts me at 8 out of 18 on the season. You call this a 3-0 win. So you got the result. So it puts you at 12 out of 18 for the season. FIFA called this a 2-1 loss, putting them at 1 out of 18 for the season because, as we've been saying, FIFA hates racing.
I mean, the only one that they called for us winning so far was Portland, which...
That's right. All right, there's the halftime whistle. Let's get into halftime adjustments because we got a lot to talk about this week again. So roster moves. Let's start out with what most likely is going to be the biggest news. Now, this may or may not have already been announced by the club by the time this episode airs, but at the time of this recording, Two Balls and a Mic on Twitter is reporting that Christina Birkenrode will be the newest member of Racing Louisville FC. So who is Christina Birkenrode? She is a 5'10" striker from La Jolla, California, who, again, by the time this episode airs, will have just turned 30 because her birthday is July 12th. So happy birthday, Christina. And also, welcome to Louisville. She was drafted by Orlando in 2016, but only played 8 games for the Pride and was then waived to make room for returning Alex Morgan. She spent the last few years playing for Monterrey in Mexico's Liga MX, where she has 125 appearances and 64 goals, which is a little better than a goal every other game. She also plays for the Mexican international team. Despite being American-born, her dad's American, her mom is Mexican, so she qualifies for Mexican national team. She's made 5 appearances for them and has scored 3 goals. So the fact that she's American-born also means she doesn't take up an international slot. What else do we know about Christina Birkenrode?
Honestly, surprisingly little, considering how sensational a player she is, just simply because Liga MX doesn't play well with a lot of my favorite stats pages. So you hit a lot of the high points, and some of the other parts that go along with that, you watch her play, and there's a lot of goals that you can watch out there, but there's a lot of things that are common between them. And one, she has an absolute sniper of a foot. The number of times where she'll first time it bottom corner or upper 90 is jaw-dropping. Mm-hmm. And she also plays a really excellent fox in the box. I mean, she is a sensational poacher.
Yeah.
But what she's not is she's not the one making the individual efforts, at least not often.
Yeah.
So she's going to be dependent on service. And it's a little weird that this is probably the closest to a true nine. And I hate using those numbers, but
yeah.
She is a through and through striker forward. And it's a little weird. It doesn't really seem to fit into the everyone band together ethos that we seem to see in how we tend to bring players in. But I don't know. With all of the highlights that you see, they're all her goals. You never get to see what her work rate is on defense or anything like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to watch almost an hour of tape on her today, and it's just goals.
Yeah.
Goals and goals and goals. And a lot of goals.
Well, she has a lot of goals. We need goals.
Yeah.
So yeah, a couple follow-up points to that is, again, this just kind of came out today, a couple hours before we sat down to record. So both of us were kind of scrambling to find what we could. And why should it not even be real? And she doesn't get signed, and this is all for naught. But what I could find, I saw a couple of highlights, same thing. And not just a sniper of her foot, she's also a very good header. Like, she had several headed goals. Now, she's 5'10", right? She's tall. And I think you've even said that the average height in Liga MX is not 5'10". She's got a lot of height on those players. So, but she's also above average height for NWSL. So she's going to be an aerial threat in the box, which is nice. Because right now our only aerial threats in the box are basically our defenders, Abby Arseg and Jalen Howell, right? Well, I guess Parker Goins has a couple headed goals, but you know, but 5'10 striker in the box, she's a good target. She is, from what else I've seen, I saw someone giving some info about her on Reddit, and they were saying the same thing. Like, she is a true striker in the sense that, unlike Uchenna Kanu, who is going to make her opportunities, she's going to press hard to win the ball back. It seems like Birkenrode is going to wait for someone to pass her the ball, and then she's going to finish it. I hate making comparisons to men's soccer when we're talking about women, but sometimes you just kind of have to. She reminds me a lot of a Harry Kane from Tottenham in that sense, where if you get them the ball, they'll do good things with it, but you have to get them the ball. They're not going to necessarily work really hard to go get it themselves, which, as you're saying, is surprising then that Kim Bjorkgren would want to sign her. Because his entire play style is everyone go get the ball back if we lose it. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays into it. And I don't know, but she scores a lot of goals. If she's a finisher, awesome. Because we need finishers. We need goal scorers. And we've been talking about getting a lethal striker. Not just us. Other people in other pods have been talking about how we need a lethal striker. We need an American born so they don't take another international slot. She checks both those boxes. I don't want to say anything to jinx it, but could she be that striker we've been looking for?
I have questions.
Well, of course.
Well, I mean, if you look, her expected goals, her 90 is hovering just above 0.5. Well, that's in Mexico. Almost exactly the same numbers that Uchenna Kanu was putting up. And, well, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Not expected goals, but result
actual goals. Yeah.
Yeah. And so those numbers are in line with Kanu, who, granted, she had to take some time to warm up to the NWSL, but she's getting to the point to where her expected goals are like 2.3 per game. I mean, that's a really good number, usually hanging right in there with the XG that DeMelo is putting up.
Yeah.
But she's still struggling. And I don't want to compare apples to apples, but we've got a striker that we brought in from Mexico that isn't maintaining the form between leagues. And it's worrisome.
Yeah. And another point there is, what does that say to Uchenna Kanu? When she was a striker from the Mexican league that you brought in to be your goal scorer, and not even 6 months into the season, you're now getting a striker from the Mexican league to be your goal scorer. That could send a message that may not be good. So I don't know. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah. There's other things that play into that I think we'd be better placed to talk about towards the end of the year.
And yeah.
Instead of where we're jockeying for the games during the World Cup.
Right. And does that mean that they would both be fighting for minutes at the same exact position? Or would we slot Kanu out to the wing? Or something like that. You know what I mean? So, I know we're obviously speculating here, but that's the whole point of what we do here. So, anyway, moving on. As we mentioned earlier, we also signed a national team replacement player, Maddie Picorni, who got minutes in the last game. And just to clarify, national team replacement players are not full roster players. If we end up signing Birkenrode, we're assuming she'll be a full roster player with a full contract. National team replacement players have a short-term contract during the international break, during World Cup, to replace some of the players that you've lost. But as soon as basically they come back when the World Cup's over, Pecorni's contract is over, potentially, unless she gets picked up on a full. That's how we got Zanetta Wine last year. She was a national team replacement player during the international break, impressed well enough that she earned herself a full contract and full roster spot. Not saying that Pecorni's going to do that, but not saying that she isn't either. We only got 10, 15 minutes of her in the last game, but I liked what I saw in the midfield. And we needed midfield depth during this break. So I like this signing.
Yeah. And when her name first came up, I said to you, that name sounds so familiar. She's done a lot of non-roster invitees in the league. And I want to say that at some point she was briefly tied with coming into Racing for preseason, but I can't find where I saw that. But where she has been is HB Køge in Denmark, who all 3 years that she's been there, they have won the division. And she starts just about every game. She's played every game in the first couple of seasons. This last season, her minutes dropped a little bit. But in her 21 to 22 kind of breakout year, she got 11 goals off 22 starts in 24 matches with an assist. So just absolutely shooting the lights out for a midfielder. Yeah. And I like it.
Yeah.
She's one that I've got better numbers than I do video. So backwards from Birken Road.
Yeah.
I was able to find a few good highlight reels of her, but again, they're all goals. So I don't know what she's going to look like in the midfield. And really, I'm not sure where she's going to slot in. I'm guessing that with these numbers, she's probably going to be deployed more forward.
Yeah.
Maybe where Borges would be.
Well, that's what it looked like she was doing in the last game when she came in, is less of a defensive mid like Howell and more of an Ari type, like bring the ball forward and play out to the middle and get the ball forward to the attackers. So yeah, that fits.
I am kind of curious to see how we utilize her because, you know, she's got the potential on paper. And if she balls out, you know, we absolutely would be willing to sign if we have the roster space. But that's a conversation for after the World Cup is over.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm optimistic. Is there any downside to the signing? No, we needed depth at midfield anyway. So I'm glad to have it. I would have liked to possibly even had one more, but I'll take what I get.
Yeah. All right, moving on. We have three players that have been called up to international duty, not for the World Cup. Their countries didn't qualify, but we are in an international break basically right now. So Amina Ekic, Eli Pikiyamsa, and Rebecca Holloway are all going to play friendlies with their countries on July 14th and July 18th. I wanted to bring this up because I've seen several people confused about this and saying that's three more players that we're losing for Challenge Cup games. Our next game is not until the 21st, which is 3 days after this last game. Now, that there's a three-day span between their second game and then our next game. You know, there's travel time in there and whatnot, but I don't know that I'm as worried about losing three more players, especially when our next Challenge Cup game is against Chicago, which we'll get to in a minute. What do you think about that?
Well, if you look at who is traveling, you've got Holloway, who's struggling to get minutes. Ekic, who's struggling to get minutes, more that she's struggling to get well.
Yeah.
And Pikiyamsa is the only starter caliber out of the three. And
but we have a Julia Lester, so.
Yeah. Yeah. My only concern is, you know, that does strap us a little bit for center back. But Lester has done really well. I don't feel that we've got a decrease there. And indeed, Lester's been starting more. So,
and Zanetta Wine plays defense. So,
yeah. And so we've just kind of moved a little bit down the depth chart. That's it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not as worried about losing three more players during this break because it's two games during an international window, and they may be back for the next game. So anyway, last point we have, how did the W League team do this year?
Well, first off, I know that everybody has been hearing me sing the praises of Ella Sanchez, and
she's amazing.
The things that were going through my head on how we would get to sign her to play for Racing, well, they've all been for naught because she is going to Mexico, which I'm glad that she's getting signed. I'm glad that she's going where she wants to go. I'm just heartbroken that it's not going to be with us. Mm-hmm. And if I'm still of a mind that, you know, Racing's got Sanchez on their discovery list before they ever made the announcement that she was signed. But that's just me. There's just too much talent for a young player to just kind of let that one slip away.
No, and that's, yeah. So here's the thing. I'm going to hopefully alleviate some of your fears. Just the way I'm looking at it is Ella Sanchez is very, very, very talented. Actually, went to a W League game for the first time with you a couple weeks ago and got to see her in person finally. And oh my God, I had no idea. Like I'd heard she was good and I knew she was good. I didn't know she was that good. And she's 18. That being said, say we did sign her. We got a lot of depth at attack and she's only 18. How many minutes would she have gotten? Right. So if she goes and signs for a team in Mexico and gets actual playing time down there where she's going to ball out, if we have her on our discovery list, which means nobody else can snag her, she gets playing time and experience, and then we pick her up when she's even better and can get more minutes for us. I prefer that to her signing with us and then sitting on the bench forever.
Well, what I would have preferred is her signing for us and going out on loan. Yeah, that way we had it locked up.
That's true.
But yeah, like you mentioned, you know, you got to come out and watch a W League game.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That was the game they won like 7-0.
No, you were the one they won 5-0. It was the next one that they won 9-0.
No, it was 7-0. And then they played that same team again and beat them 9-0. It was 7-0 that one I was at. It was the last home game. And they won 7-0. Guys, go to the W League games when they're at home next year. They're free. They're at the training facility. They're fun.
Yeah. But I guess it's kind of telling that I've apparently gotten that one mixed up with one of their 5-0 wins.
Yeah.
The team itself was exceptional. We came in second in the Valley Division, and we only came behind the Indy 11 W League team because we lost the head-to-head tiebreaker because they came here and beat us 2-0 about a month previous to when you saw them.
Yeah.
And that's an absolute heartbreaker. Because, I mean, they did everything right to win the division with a grievous goal differential. I mean, they only played 14 games and had a GD of like 38.
Oh, my God.
And the talent came from everywhere. Because it wasn't just Racing Academy players. You know, there's a lot of collegiate players in there.
Yeah.
You know, some of them are people that we're scouting out. And a couple of them are probably going to be names that you hear me say again later in the season when I start talking about draft prospects.
Yeah.
Brooke Dardano, who plays right here in U of L. Every game I saw her in, I've got notes about how great she's been. Just an exceptional forward. Plays on the left side and really creative, fast, good on the ball. Then we've got Michaela Agresti out of Boston College, a fantastic center back. And one of the things that I wrote down that I think is most important is she is completely unimpressed by her opponents. The coolest head I've ever seen on a collegiate level player. Just it reminds me about how Ursig will just watch somebody step over the ball two or three times, then toe poke it away from
him.
That same mojo, man.
It's like in Indiana Jones where the guy's like doing all the sword movements and then he just shoots him. Like, man, cool.
And there's a couple others that I could really mention, but I really want to give a special call out to Michaela DeMello, who is talented. I mean, this family has some good genetics for soccer. One thing that I am wanting to see a little more of, her ball control isn't quite as strong as her older sister, but her older sister, I mean,
yeah,
I bet she didn't have that kind of ball control, you know, 4 years ago either. But what she doesn't quite have as far as that skill on the ball, she's got in brute strength.
Yeah.
She's powering through people as often as she's going to dribble past them. And so getting to watch a DeMello play like a howl.
Yeah.
It's tickling. That's what
I was going to say. When I went to that game, I was expecting to see a mini Sav DeMello. What I saw instead was a hybrid of Savannah DeMello and Jalen Howell. Like, if Savannah DeMello and Jalen Howell had a baby, it's Michaela DeMello in the way she plays, which is a lot of fun if you think about it.
You know, the bulk of the time on the field is a lot of the complete and collegiate players. That way we get a chance to evaluate them. You know, like Emily Mandrill got a lot of time last year so we could scout her. And, you know, we fought right up until the last minute to try to get her in the draft. And then when Orlando wouldn't budge and she went as the third pick, we're just like, you know what? We'll just take Paige Monahan instead, because that's what we did with our number four pick. And I'm hoping that some of these names that, you know, I've written down here, names that the team's written down as well.
I'm sure.
Now, one of the really cool things is next to all these collegiate players are legit academy players. And four names have stuck out to me in particular. Caitlin Chase, Betsy Huckabee, Marley Kaylee, and A.G. Gibson. The game that you were at, Marley Kaylee was bombing up the wing just over and over.
Yeah.
I mean, fast, aggressive, and willing to take people on. And she is a 2005 player. And so is A.G. Gibson and Betsy Huckabee. So these three are probably at an impasse right now that they're very likely to sign collegiate, just simply because I don't think that Racing has anything in place for secondary education the way that the USL Championship does. They've got an agreement with some college that the name eludes me at the moment, that even if you sign with a USL team, you're eligible for secondary education. And once Racing gets something like that put into place, I mean, these are ladies that I would absolutely see sign to academy contracts. That way they could continue to develop in the academy and even get first team minutes the same way that the academy has worked for the Louisville City side. There is one that is an outlier, and that's Caitlin Chase. She's 2006, so she may have another year in the academy yet. So from what I saw, that would be a very interesting person to try to retain. But I'm having a lot of trouble kind of putting together how we would implement this, because the contracts that are held in the W League are separate from the contracts held in the NWSL. They're two different entities.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if there is a mechanism that we have other than those U18 contracts that instantly turn you pro, you know? And it's just, it's a problem that the NWSL is going to have, to where there's not an either or. I mean, you've got to either go full pro instantly or get your secondary education and go through the draft. And this is something that the players are going to need to bargain at some point. That way they're not forced to choose.
Mm-hmm.
But enough of the doom and gloom. There is one last thing about the academy that I am absolutely tickled by. And it starts with friend of the pod, Joe Woolley, last week, reminded me that he sent me an article at the beginning of July, 2014. So this is a month after Louisville City was announced, about a player named Libby Stout, born in Louisville, Kentucky, playing on the Liverpool women's team, alongside Gemma Bonner. She spent a couple of years abroad and wound up getting some time with the Boston Breakers, wound up moving out to Athlone Ladies, not concurrent with Coach Kim, and was about to retire and was signed as a national team replacement for the Orlando Pride. Didn't see any minutes, but that was the end of her playing career. She did go forward as a goalkeeping coach, however, and in 2022, she signed with the Academy to be the W League's goalkeeping coach. So we've got a native Louisvillian with worldly experience who's come back home to teach the next generation of Louisvillians. And I just love that story.
That's great. All right, there's the whistle for the second half. That was a very long halftime, but the players are back out in the field. So it was a very long halftime. It's going to be a very short second half because we only have one game to preview between now and our next episode. It is Chicago at home in the Challenge Cup, Friday, July 21st at 7 p.m. Now, this one is going to be similar to the Kansas City game, where we've been steamrolling them and they've been garbage and they've been trading places with Kansas City for bottom spot of the table, but they've won their last two games against decent teams. And that's part of the insanity that I was referencing earlier that has kept Racing in the position that they're in. So what's going to happen here?
All right, so yeah, let's look at that run of form that they've won the last two games. With 40% possession, 67% pass accuracy, a total of 16 shots and 6 on goal.
That's not good.
It's not good at all. No. It's really not. So, game before last was the Wave. They won 1-0 at home. And, I mean, frankly, it was, the Wave was a dumpster fire. In the 16th minute, the Wave blasts one off the post. In the 20th minute, Chicago returns the favor and hits the woodwork. In the 41st minute, there was a fantastic play that San Diego just happened to be offsides. There were two red stars on the play, and it felt like the entire Wave team, short their defensive line, was in the box.
Jeez.
And the goal was inevitable. They just couldn't keep everybody on side.
Oh, no.
That's all that was. Right before halftime, stoppage, first minute, 45+1. Red Stars got a goal, and it was a great bit of teamwork. I mean, a really good buildup of play that, you know, they're still a dangerous team. You know, they're not, well, they're pretty bad, but they're not helpless.
Yeah. I mean, it's still NWSL. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. And in the 70th minute, San Diego was unlucky again off a really good second ball. And so realistically, this felt like it should have been 2-1 to the Wave, but they just simply could not get the ball to drop right for them. That was it. The Wave looked the better team and just happened to come out the wrong side of the scoreline. Their most previous game, the Red Stars traveled to Houston to play the Dash. And as a neutral, I'm not sure if this would have been entertaining or frustrating to watch. Depends on, you know, how much you enjoy your chaos, because all the way up until the 69th minute, every single good chance was just chaos in the box. That was it. Like, if you like watching two teams that you don't care about, you know, play pinball, yeah, it was a lot of fun. But it was so frustrating because nothing came from any of it. No goals, no real good chances. And it wasn't until the 69th minute that the Red Stars score, and it was just poor coverage on a good run. Again, they had some good buildup, but this one was more of an individual effort. And you know, you just can't play sloppy defense against the Red Stars. And that's really all it's been. You know, a couple of momentary hesitations where they're able to squeak in the one goal, and the other teams just can't compose the shots that actually drop. So again, this is one of the ones where, I mean, it's what, the fourth time I'm going to say this. If we put in our best defensive effort, there's no reason why this isn't going to be a clean sheet. And just simply because I'm not sure what our offensive look is going to be, I'm going to just call this one a 1-0 win.
Oh, okay. It's lame. I got 3-0. It's Chicago, man. We've already thumped them. We've already beaten them 3-0 in Chicago. I'm not worried about this one, to be honest with you. I'm famous last words in this league. But it's Challenge Cup. We've got our full defense and more of our players are finding the back of the net lately. Parker Goins really likes playing against Chicago. She scored against them twice this year. So, you know, honestly, I would not mind her getting the start in this game over Davis. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, with Kanu out, I put Parker in. Let's see what happens there. So, yeah, I'm calling 3-0 on that. I was just looking. You want to – I don't know how I feel about this. We've been making fun of Chicago and Kansas City all season because they trade place for bottom of the table. They're the bottom two teams in the league. Both of those teams have more wins than Racing does this season.
Yep.
God. This league, man, I'm telling you, it's insane, which makes it so much fun. All right, look at that. The fourth official's already put up the board. We're in the stoppage time. It was a really quick half. So, speaking of Challenge Cup, we're halfway through the group stage. We've played 3 of our 6 games. Racing has won all 3 of their games. Not only are they leading the group, they are leading the entire Challenge Cup. They're the best first place team. We've been talking about this a little bit because the way the Challenge Cup works, as far as we understand it, is there's 3 groups and the 3 winners move on to the semifinal and the best second place moves on. Then they get ranked by how well they did in the group stage. 1, 2, 3, 4, right? First place plays fourth place in the semifinal. Second place plays third place. And then the winners go to the final. Cody, how do they decide where those games are played?
Well, more specifically, 1, 2, and 3 are the winners of each. And the fourth is the best second.
That's what
regardless.
I said.
Well, no, not what you said was how well they did. The best second could have a better record than a winner. And they're still going to be fourth.
Sure.
Now, where this gets all kinds of fun, the first and second winners have home field advantage. And so second place plays third place, first place plays best second. As it stands right now, and this is a very real possibility moving forward, because we are absolutely feasting on an underpowered Central Division. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah.
There's a very real chance that Racing is going to be top overall seed, which means home for the semifinal, and should we win, home for the final.
Yep.
Now, that is a really cool proposition, especially considering, as it stands right now, best second is Kansas City.
This league.
Which means we have to win at home against Kansas City, and we're in the Challenge Cup final at home.
We're hosting the Challenge Cup final.
And the reason I wanted to specifically draw the line about who's fourth, KC Current has a better point total than North Carolina, who is winning the Eastern group.
Oh, that's true.
And so they're in a very, very good position to be best second.
Yeah. Because, I mean, look at the other second places. Well, Gotham has a game in hand, but they're at 4 points. And the next second place is Angel City on 4 points. So this is a very, very, very real possibility. We're not like stretching on this one. We're not doing what we did when we were predicting Katarina Macario coming to Racing. No, this is based on what we're looking at, the results we're seeing. This is, at this point, more likely to happen than it's not. We have 3 games left in the group, and we don't even have to win all three for this to happen. It'd be great. I mean, it's going to guarantee it if we do.
Right now, we're talking about games per matches played, because OL Reign has played one more game than us,
right,
they're 1 point ahead.
Right.
Yeah, so it's not like, oh, we're walking away with this. You know, we do need to keep the heat up, but it's very real that it's Kansas City and Chicago
and
that
Houston.
We are. Yeah, and Houston's not great.
No.
So the possibility of us doing a clean sweep is there. We just have to walk into every game respecting it.
Oh, yeah. And we absolutely are, because of everything Kim's been saying about the Challenge Cup. He's almost comes across as the only coach in the league that cares about it. As much as he's talked about it and the importance that he's put on it, no other coach has really been doing that. I'm not saying they don't care about it, but Racing and Kim Bjorkgren care about the Challenge Cup, which means they're going to go into every game expecting and actively trying to win. Even if the wins don't matter, even if we're mathematically already through, we're not the first ones that know that we'd be hosting these games. The club and ownership and front office and all of them have to know that. And that would be such a boon to the team, especially for attendance. I mean, if we host the final of the Challenge Cup, I'm going to tell you right now, we're going to have over 10,000 people at that game.
I'm inclined to agree.
So,
and just as another bit to kind of solidify what I'm saying about Kansas City, outside of Racing and OL Reign, Kansas City is the only team in the Challenge Cup with more than one victory.
It's wild. This league is wild. All right, moving on from that. Last point we have. Just want to congratulate Savannah DeMello on earning her first cap for the U.S. Women's National Team last Sunday in the send-off game against Wales. She subbed in with roughly 30-ish minutes left in the game, so she got good minutes. She wasn't just thrown in like 10 minutes left to run around for a little bit. She got solid playing time, and she looked good, to no one's surprise, as at least for Racing fans.
Well, let's not sugarcoat it. She came in along with Trinity Rodman and Lynn Williams, and let's call it exactly what it is. The 60 minutes that were before that were wasted.
Yeah. It was not good. I'm not reading too far into that. There's been lots of people putting out there that send-off games are not indicative of how the team is going to do in the tournament. It's the last chance for Vlatko to play around with what he has. And a couple of the main players like Rose Lavelle and Julie Ertz and Megan Rapinoe are still coming back to full fitness from injuries. So don't read too much into how that game looked in the first 60 minutes if you're a U.S. women's national team fan leading into the World Cup. But it was 0-0. And then DeMelo, Trinity Rodman, and Lynn Williams came in, and they won the game 2-0. I tweeted about that as I was watching it. And DeMelo comes in, and the first thing she does is draw a foul. Because that's what she does best. She had a couple mistakes, but overall, I mean, she looked like Sav DeMelo on the field, and it was a breath of fresh air in there. She was pressing, she was doing well. Trinity Robbins' second goal, I don't think happened unless DeMelo gets in there first and breaks up the ball.
Oh yes, yeah. No, she was in there causing all the chaos.
Yeah,
and.
She didn't get an assist or anything, but she started that play that led to Rodman's second goal.
Yeah. And I didn't watch the game proper. I watched some extended highlights. And the impressive thing that I'm seeing is not only does she look like Sav DeMelo, she looks like she fits there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so cool.
No, it is really, really cool. And obviously, people who watch NWSL know who she is because she's having a hell of a season and should at least be in the conversation for Player of the Year. But a lot of people that watch the national team don't watch NWSL or don't follow it closely enough. This is an uncapped player before this game. A lot of people most likely didn't know who she was or anything about her. So I was glad that she got capped before the tournament. It would have been cool if she got her first cap in the tournament, but you can't guarantee she's going to get many minutes in the tournament. So I'd like that she got her first cap. She got significant minutes to go out there and show what she can do in the midfield and earn a place. And that's not to say that we won't see her playing at the World Cup, because in the group stage, I mean, last World Cup, we won a game like 15-0. So I'm not saying it's going to happen again, but it could.
Well, you also got to think, you know, with the group stage being so compact, you've got to rotate players. You've got to. So the notion of her not getting minutes doesn't even exist in my mind.
Yeah. So I think it's going to happen. I'm going to be very excited to see her playing in the World Cup. So, and not just her. Obviously, we have six players from Racing in the World Cup. I just wanted to call out Sav because she got her first cap on Sunday. We also got official news that Wang Shuang, to no surprise, is going to the World Cup. Some of the more official ones that got announced, we knew they were going, right? So like Wang Shuang, and I think Ari got officially announced, and a couple others. And that's not to minimize them. There was no real question about them going like there was with Sav. So congrats, Sav, on your first cap. You will be a household name sooner than later. All right, there's the final whistle, which means that's our show for this week. Be sure to reach out to us on Twitter at LavenderLVL and let us know all your thoughts on all the crazy stuff that we've discussed this week. We'll be back in 2 weeks, so we'll see you then. Bye, everybody.
Lavender Louisville is brought to you by Joe Havelda and Cody Ruth. Music by Tyler Lance Walker Gill. Logo design by Ryan Simpson. Contact Lavender Louisville on Twitter at LavenderLVL or email lavenderlouisville@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.